is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The president's five-day embassy to Asia, heading to Seoul, South Korea, and the APEC meeting, previously in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, for the meeting of ASEAN, and in between a stop at Tokyo to greet and embrace the new prime minister, Takeuchi Sanni, who is the first female prime minister of Tokyo, but more importantly, has organized a very, very strong connection to the United States, one taking place over time, but certainly never stronger than right now, the promise of tariffs being worked out, promise of security being guaranteed, or at least as much as she can do right now. The big one is ahead, the APEC meeting, but all through the Eastern Asia, Western Pacific, our anxieties about the People's Republic of China, which is profoundly weakened, perhaps permanently, but certainly right now, and yet has a large military force in the hands of men who are non-transparent. All of that, I go to Gregory Copley, my mentor and colleague of strategic studies for defense and foreign affairs, the author of the new book, Noble State, and we'll come to the King Charles Report, but right now, we begin with what looks like a celebration tour, Gregory. The president is being greeted with smiles everywhere. Where do you see China's interest in these matters? Is the trade tariff dispute enough for China to be satisfied, or does it want to be aggressive again? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, I think what is China, one might ask at this stage? It is not the unified structure of Xi Jinping of a few years ago. It is not the reformists and the party elders in the CCP, the Communist Party of China, in its own right. And it's not the military. They all have competing claims. They're all at a stalemate. They all want to give the impression that it's China business as usual, and it is nothing like that. The reality is that Xi Jinping, in order to keep this facade of normalcy, has retained his titles and ranks within, as president of the People's Republic of China, as the general secretary of the Communist Party, and as chairman of the Central Military Commission. He's retained all those titles, but doesn't in fact have the power anymore. So he in fact was removed during the fourth plenary session of the 20th Party Congress, which went from October 20th to 23rd, but it looks like he's still in charge. And the reality is he's not. So that means that all of the key power contenders in the People's Republic of China are fighting for their lives. And by not being resolute against Xi in the 24th plenum, in the fourth plenum, rather, what we have is that Xi and the party seem to be as one, and the public will blame them as one. So the objective of getting rid of Xi so that the party could survive has now disappeared, more or less, and the party must fight for its survival against the public discontent. That's it in a nutshell. Now, it could be resolved in the coming months, when Xi Jinping could retire on health grounds, make it look like a peaceful transition. But it's his way of going out with the claim to dignity. But even Russia, the Russian government, has leaked that Xi was suffering from grave health issues. And this was before the party congress on about October 21st. So they sided with the reformists against Xi, which is remarkable. It shows just how weak Xi Jinping has become. And if he goes to Seoul for the APEC summit, what will he negotiate with President Trump? He cannot really negotiate on his own behalf. President Trump has already pulled away the structure of China's last negotiating ploy, which is being able to control rare earths production and delivery to the West. because now we've seen that Australia and the US have got their own rare earths deal, which could supplant China, could provide enough rare earths and critical minerals for all of Europe and the United States and Japan, for that matter. And President Trump, of course, with Prime Minister Takeuchi in Japan, has done another deal on rare earths, so that they're all working together on this processing. So China's not only lost its economy, it doesn't have a coherent leadership. It's lost its power. The PLA is in disarray. And the United States is basically triumphant and triumphal, I might add, in Asia at the moment. The president's trip to the ASEAN summit in Kuala Lumpur was overwhelmingly successful for the U.S. The trip to Japan, overwhelmingly successful. The greeting with and from the emperor was almost unprecedented. It reminded you of MacArthur's first meeting with the emperor in 1945. So it's going from strength to strength there, even though there is great instability in the People's Republic of China as this power struggle continues. And certainly that could give way to unstable behavior, including lashing out at people at Taiwan, for example, which would be unsuccessful, but it could be very damaging. But I don't think that will happen. But it is a critical situation right now where China has been resoundingly defeated as far as the Communist Party is concerned. The question now is how to save the Chinese population and rebuild China in some form.
That is an economy that does not have a way out without repudiating the Chinese Communist Party. Is that likely, or is that what you mean by there's going to be turmoil?
Yes, there is no way out but for the Communist Party to go. The party has been attempting to resist that, and part of that resistance was in getting rid of Xi as the lightning rod for the failures. In other words, blame it all on Xi Jinping and the party will fix things. But even if Xi Jinping had gone completely from sight, as well as from power, as he did in the last few days, the reality is that China has 10 to 20 years of economic chaos and deplorable conditions for its population before it starts to reemerge with any strength at all.
The economy also is related to Asian economies, notably your native Australia, was dependent upon China's imports for the growth these last years, and now that is no longer a certainty. Is that correct?
That is correct, and the Australian economy under this present government hasn't planned for any alternative approaches to economic rebirth and regrowth in Australia. In fact, we only saw today that the People's Republic of China told BHP, Broken Hill Proprietary, the biggest resource mining company in the world, which has been shipping iron ore and other things to the People's Republic of China, they're now told that they would have to accept payment in yuan instead of in US dollars. Now, BHP will not accept this, which means that there will be a huge dislocation in some of the resource exports to the People's Republic of China. They've been going down already because of the decline in the Chinese economy, but now this will bring it to a head in Australia, to the reality that they have to find these new markets, and the new markets will be largely in places like India and the United States, and to a degree in Europe. But it's going to be a very difficult time for Australia, I would say, over the next few years. And Prime Minister Albanese, who did win some concessions from President Trump during the meetings in the last couple of weeks, essentially hasn't got enough answers to save the Australian economy at this stage.
Rare earths. It's a caveat, but I want to explore it. We're told there's a rare earth deal in place during the ASEAN meeting in Kuala Lumpur with Malaysia, Indonesia, and Thailand. We're told there's a rare earth deal in place in Tokyo. What's important there is Tokyo has the engineering and the mining necessary to convert the rare earths, which are not rare, without poisoning the workers and the atmosphere. We're told there's a rare earth deal with Ukraine. Rare earth deals everywhere. We're told the timeline is a year. Is that adequate, or do you expect the rare earth leverage going to go away?
I don't think a year is long enough to put the whole new supply chain in place. The reason why the rare earth deal with Australia was so significant is that Australia has abundant resources in literally every mineral that's required. And it has uniquely, you know, forget Southeast Asia, forget Japan, uniquely Australia has the robotic mining capability to safely extract the minerals from the earth. Japan, of course, as President Trump and Prime Minister Takaichi agreed, would be there to provide research into the handling and processing of these resources once they're extracted. And that some of that could be in Australia. There could be some of that also in Southeast Asia and Ukraine and so on. But really, the big deal was with Australia and the U.S. In the last couple of weeks.
Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. We turn to the trouble in the Middle East, ongoing, starting again, not surprising. This is CBSi on the World. I'm John Batchelor.